Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, coming up in the final hour, Mason and Ireland. Ramona Shelburne, Momo, in for Mace. In this hour, we'll take more of your phone calls. 877-710-3776 is the number. We used to never take phone calls around here, but we, especially on Fridays, we're going to do it during the pandemic. So if you've ever wanted to call into the show, today is your chance. 877-710-3776. Also following two kind of fluid stories. One is that there may be trouble in the bubble in the NBA. I'm rooting for this Orlando plan to go well. But the players are meeting as we speak on a conference call. Ramona, is it accurate to say, Howard Beck was thinking maybe up to 200 players on this call?
Yeah, I've just heard a lot. I haven't heard numbers. But I think, you know, Kyrie Irving, who is a vice president of the Players Union, is one of the people who's sort of organizing this. And I think there have been calls, honestly, all throughout the week. I think there was one a couple of days ago that had maybe 30 or 40 players. I've heard so many. This is the best way to describe this, John. I've heard so many things that are going on that, you know, it's so hard to nail down what is it exactly that players are talking about and seem to have issues with. So my answer is basically all of it. You know, I've heard some guys on the last 4 to 6 teams that got in don't want to go, that they're like, why are we doing this? We don't really have a good shot at the playoffs. What's the point? Then I've heard something about, you know, why are we doing this bubble thing for so long? Why we really can't have any friends there for 6 or 7 weeks?
Well, let me jump in right there. If that is the case, if those two things are part of this, mm-hmm. particularly teams that don't think they have a legitimate chance to win the title, why not go back to 16 teams? I mean, nobody's gone down there yet. Why not eliminate the 22 was a compromise because every team at one point or another indicated they wanted to play. Mm-hmm. Why stick at 22 if you're getting an uproar from players saying, you know, let's say teams that are, you know, 17 through 22 are saying, well, we really don't have a chance to win it. Why are we killing ourselves to go into the bubble? I guess my question is, could there be an amendment on the number of teams that go?
Oh, yes. My answer is yes, because I think that everything about this is fluid. I think that we had one plan that got approved. And part of the reason that got approved is that, you know, so much went into arriving at the number of 22. It's such a random number. It's such a random idea.
Right.
There's really not a great way of justifying why the Washington Wizards, who are 6 games out in the horrible Eastern Conference, are a part of this. The only reason they're in it is so that you can have one team from the Eastern Conference have some kind of a play-in game. So, I mean, come on. And then if you have Washington in, then you have to have Phoenix in. And I think some of those 6 teams that have been added to the, you know, the 8 teams that were in the 16 that were already in the playoff race. Some of those 6 teams have local TV deals that it makes a tremendous difference to them, whether they're in or not. Right. I think Phoenix is one of them. I think it makes a tremendous difference for them in order to play and the revenue that they would make playing versus not playing. I think that this was a compromise solution. It was sort of, you know, the word we use this term in politics, gerrymandered, right? Where you take a district and you kind of carve out little pockets. Okay, this little neighborhood, this cul-de-sac, this street, it's like these are my voters, and we're going to take this part of the district. But across the street, we're going to leave that to the next district over because they're not our voters. I mean, the 22 team proposal, this was gerrymandered. Right. That's the right way to put it.
Right.
To appease the most people and find a consensus among a lot of different stakeholders. So it took place over a number of months of talking and negotiating. There was task force. It feels a little silly that we're revisiting all of these topics now. I think there are some old topics being revisited. I think there are new topics coming up. This is always what happens when you get down to the end of a very large deal, unless you have very strong leadership that just basically, you know, forces everyone to go along with it or helps people get on board. And I actually think it shows leadership amongst the players that they are going to talk again, you know, tonight a few times just to make sure everybody feels heard.
And do you know, Ramona, is there another person on Kyrie's level, like a Team USA all-star caliber player who's having second thoughts? We heard from Carmelo. Carmelo said that, yeah, he, you know, and he's older, near the end of his career, he certainly doesn't have to play, but...
Okay, I don't know this, so I don't want to get aggregated by saying these other players are, you know, leading some of this too. I've heard sort of anecdotally that a lot of the players who are concerned with the are we doing the right thing based on what's going on in the world? Should we be using our platform in a different way? Are some of the same players that you saw very vocally out there marching with protesters over the last few weeks. So that would be some of the Boston guys, Jaylen Brown, right? Jason Tatum, like those, which is interesting that they would be aligned with Kyrie based on their own
principles. Yeah, because they butted heads when they were in Boston.
I've heard that. I don't want to report that because I don't want to be wrong about it, but I've just heard that floating around. I think there's a lot of players. I remember Woj put a tweet out 2 weeks ago, you know, saying the NBA has approved it. You know, one of a Woj tweet saying that the Board of Governors has approved this. And Patrick Beverley retweeted him saying there's bigger things going on in the world than basketball. I mean, there's just a lot of players right now that don't want to squander the moment, that want to do the most amount of good and create the most amount of change in the world while we have this moment. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to play. It just means they want to think about what the NBA's role in it is. I had an agent to me said, hey, use this to as leverage to say, hey, we want the NBA to create a fund to help promote social justice. Let's, you know, put a number on it. The WNBA, I think Breonna Stewart tweeted a picture the other day of what their sample court for the WNBA when they resumed their season. And it was like, say her name. You know, that's one of the things people have been talking about with Breonna Taylor,
right?
The woman in Louisville who was killed. I think there's all sorts of things like that right now that let's put some real ideas out there of things that NBA players can do using their platforms to promote social justice, to capitalize on this moment, to make the most of this moment. I think there's going to be a lot of that on this call too.
Well, we should be getting some details about this call soon because I think it's going on right now. Let's go to Patrick from LA on line one. Hey, Patrick, you're on 710 ESPN.
John, Momo, hey, listen, yeah, thanks. And I apologize earlier. I cut out, or my phone did. I was going to argue that this should not be happening in Florida because Florida never really shut down. They never really accepted the fact that there has been a pandemic. They did a very, very half measure in terms of shutting down, and then they opened early. So I mean, you know, there's a lot of anti-government, what would you call it, nutcases that have really fought against the effort to shut the state down, to test people at an adequate level. It never really happened, and so they're still kind of fighting it. I don't think Florida is a good place to have it. I'd recommend California, but you know, I'm biased, obviously. What do you guys think?
So I think I understand your point, and I think that is part of the reason why the NBA actually did choose Florida, because in the data that they've been looking at, it's not just number of cases in the particular state. It's number of cases in Orlando and the number of cases in sort of central northern Florida, where Orlando is, was relatively low. It's been rising a little bit, but that's only relevant if you think of who would be exposed. Like, this is a giant 200 acre resort. So the only Florida people that would matter to are like potentially people coming in and out of the bubble. I guess, the workers, the employees who work there.
But and keep
the,
in mind,
the standards that they're going to have, the workers. So this is what it's been described to me as, okay? The Disney employees who work at those resorts, they're going to be all wearing masks. They're going to be temperature checked every single day, maybe more than once a day. They're going to be very, very limited interactions with NBA players, like to the point where housekeepers aren't even supposed to go in their rooms. They're not supposed to interact face to face with any of the people in the bubble. And anybody who has even a limited amount of exposure is going to be tested at a fairly, you know, similar level to what the people in the bubble are being tested at. So it doesn't necessarily matter what's going on in Florida. I know what your point is. I actually agree with you in terms of just how they've handled it. But that particular area, it's, you have to think about what is actually going, who's actually coming in and out. The only reason this matters is if players go and leave the bubble. If people who are coming into or leaving the bubble interact with people at large. And that's an issue for a lot of players because you're supposed to stay in the bubble. And they don't want to feel like they're being put in jail. Like, that's not what this is supposed to feel like.
Patrick, the other thing is, it's heavily dependent on testing.
Yeah.
Like Ramona said, temperature checks, COVID testing. So wherever they moved it, they could do it in Florida, California. Adam Silver has said all along that any place they have it, that they have a campus, they are going to test, and test again. They feel like even the reporters that are going down there are going to be tested. So they feel like they can, and they're talking to medical people every day. I don't know if you were listening when I was talking the other day, that the Lakers, for example, have a very close relationship with UCLA Health, who is the title sponsor of their practice facility. And they've been talking, their team doctor has been involved with conversations and safety protocol since the day they started talking about playing this year. They've been, you know, there's not any decision they're making that doesn't involve medical personnel. So I don't know if that alleviates your concern at all, but I know that they are taking that part of it incredibly seriously by doing tons of testing and involving team doctors in every decision.
That does make me feel a little bit better. I do know that Florida has been undercounting. They specifically have not been counting deaths that have been occurring. Which is really concerning. But given the fact that they're going to be operating by NBA standards versus Florida standards, yes, that does make me feel better. And I'm really concerned about their safety. These guys, they're exercising to the nth degree and they're breathing in. In other words, if they're breathing in stuff, it's going to go to the very depths, the deepest depths of their lungs, as opposed to the normal person who's just breathing it in and it won't be as profuse, in other words. So,
right.
You know,
all right,
I'm really
well, thank you, Patrick.
Safety.
Yeah, thank you. It's a realistic concern. I don't blame you. And thank you very much for taking the time to call. Here's Anthony in San Diego. Hey, Anthony, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to make a quick point about what Ramona was talking about a second ago and the social justice, you know, in my opinion, opportunity. I've been kind of thinking about this for about a week. And it goes back to what Jalen Rose said about how I'm a white guy, and I think a lot of us right now are feeling like, you know, we have professional sports that are largely made up of black athletes, and it's almost like they're, you know, sports are, and music and all these things are there for entertainment. And so, you know, the idea that, you know, black people are here to sort of entertain the world, but when it really matters, you know, what are we actually doing for them, and what are we showing them that, how are we showing them that we actually want to change anything? And so even if their concerns, the NBA players, are partly about coronavirus, I think, and I hate to say it as a sports fan, but as a human, I'm glad to say it, I think they have a one shot, you know, one opportunity to really do something that shakes things up, that hurts a lot of rich people's pocketbooks, not just owners, but corporations who won't be able to advertise, you know, during this month or two month long stint of basketball that we're going to have. I think we have one shot to get this right. And if And if this movement dies and fizzles, I mean, I think we all know that it's not likely that it's really going to change much after that.
Right. But, Anthony, you understand that the players would be losing the most money.
Not playing.
You know, the point you're making that you know, there wouldn't be advertising and there wouldn't be games and stuff like that. The players stand to lose a tremendous amount of money if this doesn't go off. And Ramona explained it earlier about how their CBA is coming up, and it would give the owners, the people that you're kind of talking to, more leverage, not less. Mm-hmm. So the players and the owners have incentives to get back out there. You understand that part of it?
Yeah, no, I do completely understand. I just wonder if, you know, you fast forward 30, 40 years when all these athletes are old and gray, are they going to wonder if they, you know, did the right thing, if they should have just not played, regardless of what the financial repercussions would have been? You know, are they going to regret that? Not just black athletes, but athletes as a whole. I mean, are they going to look back and say, man, I think we had an opportunity to really make a point to the world that we are people who go to the grocery store and have families and have kids and do all the same things that your family does, and we're not just athletes. We're not just musicians. We're not, you know what I mean? And so I get it financially. They may not be able to.
I actually think that that those two things aren't mutually exclusive. I think they could play and still make all those points. So we'll see how it plays out, and we appreciate your phone call.
Well, and I want to say this to you, Anthony. It's a lot of the same things that the Clipper players were thinking about after the Donald Sterling tapes came out. And how do we make, you know, how do we show that we don't agree with what he said? How do we protest this? And they had to weigh whether they were going to boycott a playoff game maybe the rest of the season. And what was their end game in that? What did they want to accomplish in that? And, you know, a lot of players I've talked to then, now we've revisited, we're going to talk to Matt Barnes about that coming up. You know, what if you're going to do something, and this is always what I would say to this, if you're going to do something that drastic, that dramatic, if you're going to make a statement by saying we are not going to play, and you know, in your law, you know, what you were saying is that'll affect a lot of rich people, like, I mean, owners, we don't want to be used as entertainment, that'll take away from what's going on in the country, that, you know, to distract from any of that. I understand all of that. But my point is always, and I think that's what players are talking about right now, is what is the point? What do we want to accomplish with this protest? Do we just want to protest, or do we have very specific end goals that we can accomplish better by doing this form of protest? And I think, like, I would support whatever the players want to do. Like, if they want to protest and not play, I'll support them.
Well,
of course.
Ramona, let me,
I want to know what they want to accomplish from it, because that's important.
And let me make this point, and then we'll break and get Matt Barnes in here. Remember that NBA basketball is not like baseball. Mm-hmm. There's a partnership between the owners and the players in basketball. There's a 50-50 split of the revenue. They have both sides benefit from when the league does well. In baseball, what they're fighting over is that the owners get all the money. And and now they're asking the players to even take more of a cut. And the players are like, what, are you kidding me? In the NBA, whatever they agree to do, they split it up. And they have a working partnership, so that's part of all this too. We'll talk to Matt Barnes coming up, and also Fast Track at the bottom of the hour. Mason and Ireland, Ramona in for Mace, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland today. It's Momo in Ireland, Ramona Shelburne filling in for Mace, and now we get to talk to one of our favorite guys, former Laker, former Clipper, former UCLA Bruin, and most importantly, Ramona, one of the co-hosts of the excellent All the Smoke podcast. Matt Barnes online. Matt, how you doing, man?
Good. How about yourself?
Doing great. And again, let me compliment you on All the Smoke, man. It's a can't miss podcast. I don't know if even you guys knew. I covered you in college, and I covered Steven in high school. He's from Port Arthur, Texas, and I was a TV reporter down there. And and it's great to see you guys killing it, and all the great guests you get. And much kudos to the two of you for putting that together. Is there anybody you haven't gotten yet that you want?
We want, we're aiming for the stars, you know. I mean, yeah. To answer your question, we had no idea what this was going to be and what it turned out to, what it manifested to, and we're tremendously blessed and excited about it. But, you know, we've had a great first season. We're in contract negotiation now, and we're going to start the second season soon. But we want to shoot for the stars. We want MJ. We want Magic Johnson. We want the Obama.
Yeah.
We want Joe Rogan. Like, we, you know, to me, why not? You know, take a chance on seeing if we can get someone like that on our show.
Yeah, and if you ever need, like, a fill-in guest or something like that, I know Steve Mason would do it for you. I know I know he'd be available, like, on very short notice. He'd be very thrilled that you asked.
And Matt, let me just say this. He would fit right in with the theme of the show, if you know what I mean.
I get you.
Right. We don't call him Venice Mace for nothing.
Yeah.
Hey,
so,
Matt,
go ahead.
In all seriousness, though, we had you on here because you've been – you know, I know that you talk to people about this around the league all the time. You get your pulse on what's going on in the league right now. How serious do you think players are right now about using this moment, maybe not and putting basketball first, right? Using the moment that we are in as a country in the most productive way.
I've been fortunate enough to be able to talk to, you know, a handful of guys, and what I've kind of got from guys is there's two, they're somewhat divided from a standpoint that there's a handful of guys that just don't want to play.
Mm.
If for whatever reason, whether that be Corona, whether it be the rules out there, whether it be, you know, what's going on in our communities. And then there's a handful of guys that understand the moment and understand that, you know, instead of just not playing, let's make a list of demands for these teams and say, hey, you know, this is what we want moving forward. And then if that possibly doesn't work, then you think about sitting out. So it's kind of been, I think, a little disconnect from what I got. But hopefully what these guys understand is whatever the situation is, we need to be united. And I say we because I'm a former player, but I feel like that you need to be united because there's not going to be any bigger stage than when this basketball thing comes back.
We're talking to Matt Barnes. Matt, you mentioned that one of the options they're discussing is maybe make a list of things they would want to happen. What would be an example of something that might be on that list?
I think something like each individual team starting a fund, and whatever that number is, obviously a significant number that is going to continuously invest in these communities, these programs in these inner cities that help, you know, where these guys come from, where we come from. Majority of us come from nothing, under poverty neighborhoods, poor schooling system, you name it, you know, we beat the odds to make it to the NBA. So, you know, with these big teams and franchises in these cities, there's plenty of little areas like that that need help. So, you know, one thing on the list could be, you know, starting a fund that gives back to these programs in the inner city.
Matt, how do you think this is going to end up? Like, what do you think is going to happen on this call with all the players tonight?
I hope it's unity and understanding. You know, like I said, I from what I've got is there's just a little bit of disconnection of guys not being on the same page. But, you know, I have faith in Chris. I have faith in LeBron. I have faith in the real leaders of our league to turn everyone else in and get them on the same page. So my goal is first and foremost to not only in the NBA, but the black community as a whole coming together and realizing how important and how strong we can be when we do that. So first and foremost, that's it. And then, you know, guys, just be susceptible and open to listening. You know, I'm sure, guys, this is affecting everybody in different ways. So I hope you are just susceptible of listening to ideas, thoughts, and possible ideas to be more effective in this space.
Matt, you've been outspoken on the subject of racial inequality, even back to the time when you were a player. I've been saying for the better part of 2 weeks since the tragic death of George Floyd that whatever is happening in the country, this feels different. It you know, Trayvon Martin was equally tragic. It was horrible. And the highest profile players in the NBA got on stage at the ESPYs and said, look around, people, this has to stop. And then 6 months later, we were telling the same story. This, to me, feels like a tipping point. I think it's actually going to produce change. But I'm sitting here as a white guy. What do you think?
I completely 100% agree with you. I think for the first time in 400 years, the world is listening. And that has to do, obviously, with the killing of George Floyd. But, you know, the looting and the rioting. And although I don't agree with it, I understand it. You know, we've marched and protested and taken knees and put our fists in the air, and nothing has come of it. They haven't seen us. They haven't heard us. So for the first time, they hear us. So I definitely think it's important. And I think another reason why this one was kind of the last straw was because – This was an execution. This was a torturing. You know, unfortunately, majority of these victims were shot by police and they didn't have to suffer. We watched for nearly 9 minutes as this cop, with a smug look on his face, with his hand in his pocket, took this man's life. You know, and for that, and for us to visually have that ingrained in our minds, you don't have to be, I don't care who you vote for president. I don't care what you're looking at. You saw that was an inhumane act and it's enough. So I'm happy to see that, you know, my partner, Steven Jackson, and unfortunately through the loss of his friend, though, he's really taken on a leadership role in this process. And, you know, we look back on this in 20 and 30 years. You know, Jack is going to be one of the main athletes and voices that stepped up and really led this charge. And I'm happy to be associated with him. But I also want to do my part in being able to help further this movement.
So, Matt, we talked a lot about this, you know, in 2014. We talked about it again when I was doing my podcast. And you talked about it again when Chris Paul was doing the Quibi doc on Donald Sterling. And, you know, I'm wondering how what we've seen in the last, I don't know, 2-3 weeks has affected your thinking about what the Clipper players had to choose between and how they had to how they had to handle the immediate aftermath of those tapes that Donald Sterling was caught saying the racist things
right. on it. I think being in the moment, we were different. Obviously, being 6 years removed from the situation and then looking at the climate in 2020, I went, you know, and I was one of the prominent voices in that locker room. I was the one that came up with the idea of what to do. I would have pushed this out. You know, looking back on it, obviously you can't change the past, but I would have did more to understanding how historical and where it fit in the context of the game. You know, to really, for players to sit out because of racism would have been insane. You know, we had a bunch of issues to deal with at the time, not really knowing, you know, what sitting out in the playoffs would do, how long do we sit out? There was a bunch of different questions, but I think now, you know, I don't want to sound like one of those people, like the players shouldn't sit out, because as a fan of the game, I can't wait to see these guys get back on the court. But we also have to have an understanding as the black community, as black athletes, and then as a country as a whole, this is going to be the biggest stage any of these players have ever played on in this, you know, if the season is to get back on course. So I agree with the guys that realize, like, okay, let's take advantage of this opportunity. There's not going to be any fans, so everybody is going to be watching these games from the time the cameras are on you in warm-ups until the last single interview is going to be an opportunity to do something right. You know, so I'm in line with the players who want to put a list of demands. Like, hey, we need this met. We need you guys to do this. Maybe five things that these players want to see from these teams and these team owners. And then if there's kickback from that, you know, that's when I would possibly think about, okay, well, you know, shoot, you know, we're making these owners a bunch of money, and granted, they're paying us well. They're making a lot more money, that they can't come halfway and meet these players that have gotten the league to where it's at. That's an issue to sit down. But I don't agree with the guys that just don't want to play.
Matt, we really appreciate you doing this. I think your voice is unique. I hope you continue to use it. We'll keep listening to All the Smoke. And most of all, give our best to your family. How are the twins doing?
Twins are good, man. The boys are about to be 12. I have an 8.
Oh my gosh,
guy Ashton. So, you know, time is flying, but I'm enjoying it. Obviously, through the unfortunate circumstances, and I think you guys can agree, we finally get a chance to sit down a little bit. You know, most of us are on a hamster wheel, constantly not just appreciating our children, our family, our life as in general. So, you know, unfortunately, through the pandemic, I've been able to just kind of kick my feet up and work from home and spend a lot more time with my kids. And I've been truly blessed to be able to do that.
Well, please give them our best. And most of all, stay safe, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Good luck, guys.
All right. There's Matt Barnes. That's interesting, Ramona, that he said I would have pushed to sit out. I actually think that if Donald Sterling happens in 2020, a team does sit out. And I think the other team, in this case, it would have been the Warriors. I think the other team supports them.
Oh, I think the Warriors were actually closer sitting out than the Clippers were that year.
Yeah.
In 2014, I think the Warriors were down. And they just, the Clippers just kind of felt like this was not, and this is something I cover. This is something, you know, the Quibi documentary on this subject covered. The Clipper players just felt like we've never played for Donald Sterling. He was never relevant to us, so why should he derail our season? Why should he, you know, cause this for us? I understood that at the time. I understand it now. But I also understand what Matt's talking about, what my colleague Mark Spears was talking about, which is like what a powerful symbol, what a powerful moment that would have been if, you know, both teams would have just walked off the court. Wow. Yeah, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, would have been unforgettable, historic. Mm-hmm. All right, coming up next, Fast Track. I got questions for Ramona. She's got them for me. We'll tackle them all. 710 ESPN. All right, it's time for Fast Track. I got questions for Ramona. She's got them for me. We always start with a ceremonial coin flip. Ramona, we'll make it easy.
Okay.
By this time Monday, when we come back for Mason and Ireland on Monday, will we have clarity? Will we know what's happening with the baseball season? Heads, yes. Tails, no.
I'm going to say yes. I think we're going to know. I think by Monday.
Heads, yes.
Yeah.
All right. So by winning the toss, Ramona, you pick. You get to go first or you can defer. No advantage comes with that. What do you want to do?
I'm going first, man.
All right.
I'm going first.
Fast
All right.
track.
So I am asking you about your son, Jack, because I think this is awesome that he graduated from high school yesterday. I know that's such a huge accomplishment for you, for him, for your family. It sounds like it was an awesome experience walking down the Strand, right?
Right.
What do you remember about your senior year of high school? Not necessarily your graduation, but all of the activities that led up to it.
I had a very fun senior year.
Okay.
I was accepted to UCLA in, I want to say, January.
Okay.
So I had a pretty good case of senioritis.
Me too. Yep.
Matter of fact, when I was accepted, I had a very good GPA. And when I was accepted, I had yet to take the SAT. I just needed to take it. And I took it on a Saturday morning, and I stayed out too late the night before, and I was late. And the rule was, if you're late, you don't get to take it. They won't let anybody in the room after 9 a.m. And luckily, the teacher who was the proctor for the SAT that day was the official scorer for our basketball team, and I had played a basketball game the night before.
All right,
so he let me in. And but I didn't even come close to finishing it. I think I scored.
Wow!
I think I scored like under 1,000, and you get 800 for just like writing your name.
Your name,
but
yeah.
I just needed it as a formality because I had already been accepted.
Okay.
And then so I kind of coasted. I would say January through June. But what I remember about my graduation, and is if you look back on pictures from that, is I was not happy or excited on my graduation day. Yeah. I didn't necessarily think that I was turning the page or anything. I knew I was excited for what was coming up next, but I think I was kind of relieved to get out of high school.
Yeah.
And so I don't seem very joyous. And my grandfather, who was there, said to me at one point, he goes, "Hey, take a good look around." He goes, 70% of these people you'll never see again in your life.
Yep.
And I went, I thought, you're crazy. I'd go to the beach with all these people. And he was 100% right.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't realize he was going to be right. You don't realize that you have no reason to gather as a group anymore after that. So that's one thing to think about if you're like passing on grad night or if like there's.
Yeah.
Like, so that's what I remember. What do you remember about you? Where'd you go to high school?
I went to El Camino Real. Okay. Shout out to the Conquistadors. All right. I went to El Camino Real, graduated in 97. I had major senioritis, John. Right. Major. Okay.
When were you accepted to Stanford? Do you remember?
I remember it was April, and I almost blew it. Okay. So we had I got it in April, but I was definitely the whole second part of my senior year. I was like really done. Really did not. If I had one more dean yell tardy sweep as I ran the first period, I was going to scream. Like I couldn't deal with like, you know,
you
administrator.
Never.
No,
never.
I was always.
It started
even,
young.
Oh gosh. Yes. I was always late, but I couldn't deal with the administrators, the rules, the people telling me, you know, I was so over it. And it was weird because I think I was like, student body president during my senior.
Wait a minute. You were and you don't remember what you're asking a question? That was a major name drop right there.
No, I was. I was. I think it was the second semester of my senior year. I think that's when I was student body president. So I had to go in there every morning and read
you
the national.
You were not leading by example, so to speak.
No, I was terrible. I was I think I ditched a few times. I would take off at lunch and I would just ditch and come back and play and go for a sixth period. Softball was our sixth period. I would just take a long lunch. Right? And I remember they had the quarterly grades, right? And I had
you
only
like
gotten
A until the last quarter. And
until
it's
the
like
last
B,
quarter.
C, B, yeah. C. Yeah.
And I didn't care at all. I was like, whatever, man. And Stanford got my quarterly grades and they sent me a threatening letter. And they were like, we are pleased that you got into Stanford, but we want to make sure you understand that this enrollment can be revoked at any
point.
That
snapped you right into shape. Yeah.
But I do remember, I think the best part was grad night. Grad night was the best, like at Disneyland. That was
right.
Like they closed the park down and everybody who's in high school gets to go to grad night all night long. That was really cool.
Very fun. All right.
My actual graduation sucked.
Fast track.
Yeah. And it's long and
it was really hot. Yeah, right. It's hot. Yeah.
Okay, Ramona. Our friend Kevin Reese, the sports photographer, has a new coffee table book out called Special Days and Nights. You can find it on the website blurb.com. You just type Kevin Reese, R-E-E-C-E, into the search window, and it will come right up. Kevin has years and years of fantastic sports photos, a lot of them in L.A. Matter of fact, I thumbed through the book, most of them in L.A., but here's a question. What is the greatest sports photo of all time? Some would say it's the Miracle on Ice when all of Team USA is celebrating. That, to this day, is the only picture Sports Illustrated ever put on its cover with no caption. It just put that picture on with no caption. Others would say Muhammad Ali standing over Sonny Liston. There are a ton of great sports photos. What comes to mind as your favorite?
So, I mean, I still always love that pass with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. You know, the one where I think Dwayne throws it behind him and LeBron's in the air and you can see that he's about to die. That's an amazing photo. But that photo that Andy Bernstein got of LeBron this year, that's got to be up there. Don't you think when he was going into that dunk?
Yeah, it looks like Kobe. You know, they went back and found one that compares right to Kobe.
That's pretty good. Those are the first that jumped in my head.
Yeah, Andy has a whole bunch of photos. So does Kevin. If you go back and look at Kevin Reese's old pictures, you'll see a whole bunch of stuff with Vin Scully and Tommy Lasorda and Kirk Gibson. Lindsay, what's your favorite sports photo of all time?
Mine is easy, and I actually purchased a print of it and have it framed that I was really, really excited to bring in and hang in my office before the pandemic hit. But it's LeBron when he's like clutching the trophy after winning the finals in Cleveland, right before he yelled like, "Cleveland, this is for you." And like the angst on his face. Oh, it's a great photo.
Funch, how about you? Best sports photo of all time. What comes to mind?
It's got
to
be Jordan's final shot in game six, 98 finals.
Yeah, with the clock, with the 24-second clock in the background. And he's got a perfect finish. His hand is in the cookie jar, as they say.
Yeah.
Because and there's a story behind that. Phil Jackson told Jordan in the huddle before that final shot, "Hey, your last several misses have all been short. Make sure you follow through. If you if you take a jumper, follow through." And Jordan said, "Okay." And if you watch his hand, his hand's high in the air and his wrist is tilted forward like they teach you when you're learning how to follow through. So Phil gets an assist, but that's a great call, Funch. So again, if you want to check out the LA sports photos, blurb.com, type in Kevin Reese.
I got another one. The Tommy Smith, John Carlos photo is pretty good.
Yeah, one of the most iconic sports photos of all time.
Yeah, that's one.
All right.
Fast track.
Okay, I think we have our first celebrity marriage that has gone down because of the pandemic. Yesterday, Kelly Clarkson and her husband, Brandon Blackstock, they announced they're filing for divorce. They hoped things would work out between them, but quarantine only made things worse. A source tells Entertainment Tonight that some of the couple's friends were surprised by the news that Clarkson had filed for divorce, but those closest to them know it's been difficult. Quote, Kelly and Brandon had been having problems for several months and were making a conscious effort to work on things. They both hoped quarantining away from LA in Montana would help them work things out in their marriage. But instead, the change in environment was actually detrimental. The constant time together seemed to make an already challenging situation worse. John, has quarantine brought your marriage closer together, or can you see some issues with spending all this much time with your spouse?
Lisa and I were just talking about that we've been together so long.
Uh-huh.
We've been together for 27 years. So we're used to living together and we're fine. Like, you know,
yeah.
There's nothing one of us could do that the other one would find surprising as a quarantine issue. But I actually think that most divorces that are being announced now are partially because of quarantine.
I did too.
I once met Julianne Hough and her husband at a fundraiser, and they both seem really cool and nice. And they announced, "That's it, we're done." And I wonder if that's because they're both so on the go that when they realize they have to be together every minute of every day, it's like, oh.
Yeah,
I don't like you that much. So are you and Nevin, like, you and Nevin seem to be like
I think
know
we're
each
better.
Other like Lisa and I. Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, but it was interesting because I'm like you. I'm always traveling. I'm on the go. I mean, Nevin used to joke that he had to like follow me on Twitter to keep up with what I was doing. Like sometimes I don't answer his texts. He'll say, what are you up to today? When are you coming home? And I may not get back to him right away. And he'll look at my tweets. And he's like, oh, okay. We had this life where like, I think he liked having his own space and his own time. I think he enjoyed, you know, having his guy time to play video games while I wasn't home and, you know, I'd be on the road. And of course he missed me, but he also had a lot of freedom. I was wondering how this was going to go, but to be honest, we're both so busy working and taking care of Daniel with like only my mom to help. Like it's just, you know, we don't have time to, have any problems.
Right. Lisa and I are the same way. Like if we had any underlying issues,
it
would have come up already.
It would have.
Wouldn't have been caused by quarantine. All right. More Fast Track coming up next. Momo Informace. I'm John Ireland, ESPN LA. All right. Fast Track rolling on, and it's to me.
Fast Track.
All right, Ramona. Rockets guard Russell Westbrook is producing a documentary series about the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, according to Variety. Westbrook will be the executive producer for the series, which is titled Terror in Tulsa, The Rise and Fall of Black Wall Street. Variety reported this on Tuesday. In 1921, in what was considered one of the nation's worst cases of racial violence, a white mob attacked the predominantly black Greenwood district of Tulsa, looting and burning homes and businesses. The reported deaths were 36, though a 2001 Oklahoma commission said it's likely 100 to 300 people were actually killed. Now, Momo, I love history. Always have. I have a degree in history from UCLA.
Yep.
I'm a little ashamed to admit, I've never heard about the Tulsa race riots. Steve Kerr said the same thing on his podcast this week. He had never heard of these until Andre Iguodala told him about it 2 years ago. Is this a byproduct of what's happening now that we might do a better job of actually learning about the history of race in this country because all of these protests have forced us to take a look at this problem?
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard of it. And the only way I had kind of heard of it was this, you know, the show Watchmen on HBO. That's like the beginning of it. It's like, and I thought it was like fictional. I didn't know that was a real thing. And I was like, wait, that really happened? What? And then in Wright Thompson's story a couple weeks ago on Michael Jordan and where he came from in North Carolina, apparently there was a race riot just like that in 1898 in North Carolina. Same thing, like a massacre. I'm like, I was an American studies major in college. Okay. I took lots of U.S. history at Stanford.
Me too.
I never heard of these things.
Yeah.
I think
that's part of that was Andre Iguodala's point to Kerr is that a lot of people don't understand the history of race in this country because it's not taught. So I'm glad Westbrook's doing this. I'm glad this story, even though it's 100 years old, this happened in 1921, it's 99 years old, is going to be out there, and we're going to learn about it. Because as I've been saying for 2 weeks, black people have been telling us for years that they get treated differently. And I don't know if we didn't believe him or didn't pay attention to him, but I'm glad that there's a spotlight on it now, and I'm glad to see Russell Westbrook, who I like a lot as a player, is getting involved in this as a producer, an executive producer of this, and I hope it comes out soon so we can learn about it. Funch.
Fast track.
Momo.
All right, my turn. Okay, which question am I going to go next? All right. With movie house theaters shut down, Ontario International Airport is launching a free drive-in movie series with favorites such as The Sandlot and Ford versus Ferrari starting on June 19th. It's going to have 2 50-foot screens with digital sound fed directly into your vehicle through FM radio signals. Don, my question to you is, what is the most fun you've ever had in a car?
Let me see. Okay, so
you can give me the Disney answer if you want.
No, I'll give you an answer that will not get either one of us fired.
All right.
In college,
I
dated a girl for a while, so she was my girlfriend. The problem we had is she lived in a sorority, I lived in a fraternity, and her car was a Fiat. Have you ever been in a Fiat, Ramona?
It's real little.
Real little. It is basically the size of a Mini Cooper, and it has a stick shift. So as much fun as I had in the car, there were many, many, many obstacles, and I remember that, and I will never, ever own a Fiat for that exact reason. How about you?
Oh, I was just going to talk about road trips. I don't know about you. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've actually been to a drive-in.
At UCLA, the road trip that we took, the default road trip was always to Vegas. What was the default road trip at Stanford?
Didn't do too much road tripping because I was playing softball. I was like really busy all the time, but we were always in the vans together. So I remember our drive. We would always fly into Phoenix and drive to Tucson. So that's about an hour and a half drive.
Yeah, at least.
And we would have so much fun on that road trip. That was really fun. We would just, it was always like whoever got to control the radio, and we would DJ. We usually landed at night. So it was just like 7 or 8 girls in each van, and we would all just be driving, and it was really fun all the time. But I don't know why you went to that direction. I didn't mean to lead you there.
I am not a fan of Fiats for that reason.
No.
Funch.
Fast
not
track.
Much room to operate.
Yes. All right. Let's end Fast Track with a game. That would only be appropriate. And Ramona, since you're here, I know you're always fond of the Uber Facts game.
Uber Facts!
Now,
I knew it!
Lindsay does not like this game because, as she correctly points out, Uber Facts are often wrong. But, Lindsay, in the spirit of the end of Fast Track, just play along. I have 4 facts. 3 of these are actual Uber Facts. 1 I made up. It's up to you 3, Lindsay, Funch, and Ramona, to see if you can identify the fake fact. All right.
Remember, they're all subjective.
Yes. But now that you've made that point, just play along. All right.
Okay.
Fact number 1. Cristiano Ronaldo has become the first soccer player to earn $1 billion and the 3rd athlete ever to do it while still working, following Tiger Woods and Floyd Mayweather. That's fact number 1. Fact number 2. Solar, wind, and other renewable sources have grown so much in popularity that they are expected to surpass coal in energy generation in the United States by 2030, in just 10 years. That's fact number 2.
Ooh.
Fact number 3. Robin Williams held a total of 4 Grammy Awards. He was even nominated for Best New Artist at the 1980 Grammys. Of course, the Grammys are awarded for music. All right. And fact number 4, the Guinness Book of World Record for the longest kiss is 58 hours, 35 minutes, and 58 seconds. So that's fact number four. All right, I'll give them to you again. Fact number one, Cristiano Ronaldo, first soccer player ever to earn $1 billion, third athlete to do it behind Tiger and Floyd Mayweather. Fact number two, solar, wind, and other renewable sources have grown so much that they're expected to pass coal for energy generation in 10 years. Fact number three, Robin Williams held a total of 4 Grammy Awards. And fact number four, the Guinness World Record for longest kiss is 58 hours, 35 minutes, and 58 seconds. Lindsay, which one of those is the fake fact?
I think I'm going to guess that it's Robin Williams, because I know that he was nominated for Grammy Awards, but I don't know if he won. So that's going to be my guess.
Okay, Robin Williams. Funch, which one is the fake fact?
I'm going to say the longest kiss, because I can't imagine anyone kissing for 58 hours. I think it's less than that.
Okay, Momo, which one's the fake fact?
I think it's the energy one. I think it's the renewable energy. I think coal is still the dominant energy and will be for a long time.
Okay, so you are all smart to stay away from Cristiano Ronaldo. That is an absolute fact. Mm-hmm. He has now earned $1 billion, and he's only the third athlete ever to do it, although I would imagine LeBron catches him at some point. If LeBron's not already a billionaire, he's got to be close. But according to UberFacts, Ronaldo, third one ever behind Tiger and Floyd. Funch, you're out. That is an actual fact. The Guinness World Record for longest kiss is 58 hours, 35 minutes, and 58 seconds.
I knew
seconds.
It. Too many details.
Those are some chap lips. Lindsay, you're out. Robin Williams does hold a total of 4 Grammy Awards. He was even nominated for Best New Artist at the 1980 Grammy. So this means, ladies and gentlemen, that
this is
on
the first time ever,
the final Fast Track game, Ramona, who sucks at this game, who has never gotten an Uber fact right, is 100% correct. But Ramona, appropriately, for all the wrong reasons, you are correct. Solar, wind, and other renewable sources have already passed for the first time in 130 years. This year, 2020, is the first year since 1885 that solar, wind, and other energy sources have grown so much. So even though you were completely wrong in saying coal is going to be dominant for the next 10 years, you win by default.
Yes.
The reason why I didn't guess that one, because I was like, there's no way that they have that solar and wind have not surpassed coal. There's no way. That's why I guessed it. So I feel like I just got duped in the asking of the question.
Hey.
Well, that is also appropriate. And that
great job,
wraps
Ramona.
Up Fast Track. Alan Sliwa is standing by. We'll get him in here for a little crosstalk. And the latest from that NBA call, reports are starting to come out. And we'll update you on what may or may not have happened. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. It is time for Crosstalk. Ramona's in for Mace today, and we welcome Alan Sliwa to the program. Sliwa, what's going on, man?
Okay, so is that it with Fast Track? That's it? Today was the final one?
Yep.
More
information on that Monday, but if you're looking for a bit, Sliwa, and you want to steal it, it's all yours.
I think you guys have seen my games. I don't think that one will work for me.
Okay, well, the NBA player call, we don't even know if it's over. We think it's going on right now, Ramona.
Yeah, it's going on right now.
Okay. But Adrian Wojnarowski has just written a really interesting column. I suggest you all read it about Kyrie Irving and how Kyrie is playing the role of a disruptor, according to Woj, in leading this call tonight, and that he is pitted against, Ramona, some of the biggest stars in the league, including his former teammate LeBron, according to Woj. And Woj points out in his story that when the players' executive board voted on this Orlando proposal, it was 28-0. So the players' council voted unanimously to run with it. Ramona, do you think what Woj is writing is accurate, that Kyrie in this case is just kind of trying to be a squeaky wheel?
Yes. I think that Kyrie in some ways is saying one thing to in his role as union vice president. He's on the executive committee. He's part of that group. And then sort of behind the scenes is saying taking a far more skeptical turn. And the detail in Woj's story about what he actually said on one of their calls was really interesting to me. Like, his questions were not all that intense or substantive. They were more like, can I go in the sauna when I'm there? Yeah. Casual mm-hmm. stuff. Like, what sponsors from the NBA are going to be there? It was kind of just a little question and answer session with Michelle Roberts. So if those were his questions in the more official meetings, why are these much more substantial questions coming up outside of their official meetings? Now, that's not to diminish those questions. I'm just saying, you got to be able to say that in both settings if you really want to change things.
Ramon, I think, yeah, go ahead, John. Well, I was just going to say, I was going to say that's kind of what made this weird, this story weird, or just this conversation. By the way, it's okay if players, if they have additional questions or they felt like they wish they were a part of some kind of vote to determine whether going to this Orlando bubble or not. What made this whole thing weird was the NBA and the Players Association, Adam Silver, everybody has seemed like along this entire process that they're all on the same page, and give credit to everybody, right? The entire league of making it feel that way. So that's why I was just waiting for, okay, well, what are the additional details? And I think what Woj put on there, I mean, John, Woj's tweet, ESPN story on Kyrie Irving, the disruptor, that's obviously with a picture of Kyrie Irving right there, that's a direct, it's him that's leading the way. So that surprised me a little bit.
Well, I want to piggyback on something you just said, Alan. I absolutely believe that if players have questions, particularly questions about their health, that they're not only entitled to ask them, they should ask them. Mm-hmm. That's what any of us would do. And I think, but what this is turning into tonight, this call, which could have, hundreds of players on it, according to some reports, is basically an underground movement. Like Mark Stein, who writes for the New York Times and who we all know and like a lot, has just tweeted, Kyrie Irving will ultimately have to explain to his NBA Players Association colleagues why he is so front challenging a proposal he didn't push back hard on last week. But the union will ultimately have to explain why only one team rep voted on the proposal and why all 30 were not on the call. I think those are fair questions and players should ask them. But Ramona, you believe that even after tonight, regardless of the issues raised on the call, that the Orlando campus plan will move forward in some way, shape, or form?
Unless there's some real groundswell on this call. I think I just think that we could see some changes to this. I think this call, that we could find some, there'll be some asks, some very specific asks. I think Matt Barnes made a really good point when he said, I think what comes out of this is really specific things that players are asking for, want to see change, want to see happen while they're in Orlando, whether it relates to health and safety, whether it relates to, going in or out of the bubble, whether it relates to using the platform they have in Orlando with all eyes in the world watching them to take a stand against, for social justice and against police brutality, whatever it is. I think we're going to see specifics coming out of this, but I don't think we're going to unwind everything that's been collectively bargained this whole time. And I think what I've heard, all day long as people are talking, it's just, Kyrie Irving he's not playing. He's not going to be part of the bubble.
Yeah, he's not even going to be down there, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's good that somebody of his stature is pushing back, et cetera. The hard part is, though, is he was on he's part of the committee that was negotiating this the whole time. He's part of the calls. He was part of he had the power to raise these questions a lot earlier. So why now? Why at the 11th hour? It's not like you weren't in the loop. He was part of the loop. And in conversations, not just last week, but this week too, he hadn't raised them with the people who actually have the power to do something about it.
Sliwa, Kyle Kuzma has just tweeted. He actually retweeted a tweet from Howard Beck. Howard's tweet was I'm told today's conference call could involve up to 200 players. Also hearing that Kyrie Irving has been a driving force in organizing these calls as it is raising concerns about the NBA's bubble plan. Kuz's tweet says, some of us want to hoop and compete. Don't get that twisted. So I mentioned to Ramona earlier, every Laker player that I've talked to, and I haven't talked to all of them, wants to play. And as a Laker fan, I'm obviously rooting for that because I think the Lakers have an excellent chance to win the title. Selfish reasons, I would get to call all those games. And I think that whereas Kyrie has the right to ask questions, we had Matt Barnes on the show earlier about less than an hour ago, and Matt says what he's hoping comes out of this call is that they all just get out of this unified and go down there and play. What are you expecting, Sliwa, will come out of this?
Well, by the way, Dudley retweeted Kuz's tweet and said, facts, what time is this Zoom call today? I'm on it. So Dudley obviously trying to throw his put himself into the mix there, too. I feel like we've gone so far down the road, and I'll go back to this. We have watched Major League Baseball still even today go back and forth without making something happen, where the NBA has been, you know, more quiet, more deliberate. Adam Silver, very strategic. They've gotten this far. You spent the last week breaking down. I mean, think about this. The dates are already set. Full training camp, July 9th to July 29th, all the way down to when the NBA finals would start and when it would end. To get this far, and I think, Ramona, you mentioned something, just kind of asking the question for Kyrie, why now? That's actually, this is where I'm confused. Why now? Because he had such a voice and he has such the ability over these last couple weeks to step in and say, hey, I'm talking to other players. They have concerns as well, or whatever the case is. But to wait this long, that surprises me. Do I feel something is going to stop the NBA from going forward and finishing off the season? I don't, unless it's something, you know, from a health perspective, and that's what drives it. But it also sounds like there are a lot of players that want to make this happen and want to finish the season as well.
Yeah, and here's what I would say. I want to make sure that we don't, John, I've used the term confirmation with bias with you all the time.
Yeah, I give you full credit when I use that term, yeah.
Thank you. So the idea is essentially when you have momentum towards a deal, let's say we have a Lakers group text or group chat, and LeBron James, Anthony Davis are two of the biggest stars in the league, in the world. They're the leaders of the team, and you're on this group text. Does the 10th man on that group text or Zoom call or whatever you want to say, maybe that 10th man feels a little uneasy about things, but did he just go along with the plan because he didn't want to be the one guy holding this up? Did he feel like, was there peer pressure, whether it was spoken or unspoken, you know, whether not that anybody made him feel uncomfortable, but just because of the circumstances, because there's so much momentum amongst star players and, you know, even just around the league for the league to try to play again. Do the people who are maybe not comfortable with this, did they just kind of keep their mouth shut and reluctantly go along with this because they didn't totally feel empowered to speak?
That's it's what possible to too, Ramona, out. That they didn't know all the full details. I mean, I'm speculating here, but maybe not the restrictions of the campus or the bubble as ESPN's calling
or,
it.
And what does that really mean? How long again? 6-7 weeks? Okay, right. That's a long time. So I think that, you know, this, I'm not an NBA player, but I talk to them and their agents and, you know, I talk to players all the time, you know, people close to the league, you know, in and around the union league, et cetera. Right. The sense I have is that if you were that 10th man, you had misgivings about the plan, but you didn't feel maybe comfortable sharing that publicly. Hmm. I do think that those players who may have had issues with it, I do think that they have communicated them to either union leadership, whether it be a direct call to Michelle Roberts or to other union leaders like Jose Calderon. You remember Jose Calderon? He's a large voice in the union now. He, you know, if you're an international player who has some concerns, he's been very influential with international players. There's a lot of former players in the union, like, you know, some of the reps. Frank Burkowski is one. I do think that players with misgivings have been able to express them anonymously without, and none of those names have leaked. I've heard three or four names But not enough to where you could report it. And you definitely have to go to that person and say, I've heard that you've had issues, right? They haven't really leaked or gotten out there. And I think that's a testament to the strength of the union, the strength of people understanding how delicate this would be for somebody in their career, you know, to be somebody who just says, I just really don't think this is a good idea. Right. That's important to they feel heard as well.
Ramona, I spent some time on this yesterday where, it's so easy throughout this whole process as a fan or somebody in media to just say, hey, let's kick that ball down the road. Let's keep moving forward. And then when there's the reality part of it, I just, as an example, if you were asked, I can't sympathize with the players because let's just use you as an example. If you were asked to be down there for 60 days. Yeah. Or something along those lines.
Yeah,
that's going to be. I'm sure you're going to be, wondering if, hey, does that make sense? Okay, I got my kid here at home. Like, I get it. I understand that. I think a lot of people haven't really took that into consideration. We just are thinking, hey, sports is coming back. So now that the dust is kind of settling,
they make millions of dollars. They should want to play, right? Like, do we all kind of get that? It's their job. They make millions. They should go play. And I want to stick up for people who may have issues because I feel the same thing myself. I think to myself like, God, if it was my job where I had to go. Now I don't think it's going to be like that because they don't think they really want us there, John, to be honest. Yeah. They want to have less reporters there than they want to have less people there than they need. I'll phrase it differently. They want to have fewer people there than as possible. They want to have so there's plenty of people who really want to go and don't have the same kind of qualms that I would have. And mine are mostly related to, it's not really related to my own safety. It'd be just being away from my son who's very young. And for that amount of time, you have to be be willing to be away for 2-3 months. It's a long time. And for, a child who's under two. And we also don't have childcare right now. A lot of families don't have childcare right now. Schools are closed. Daycares are closed. I have a couple ladies who used to come over and watch him when I was working. We haven't had them come over in months, because of COVID. And so I don't think I could put all the responsibility for watching my son on my husband and my mom. That'd just be really hard. And so I really sympathize with players who are in this position. Like, I get it.
And we'll see what comes out of the call because we're all speculating on what these guys are talking about. They may come out of the call stronger than ever. All right, coming back with more crosstalk next, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland show is ending. The Sliwa show is beginning. We're doing a little crosstalk. Sliwa is here, and Sliwa, you have something to read.
Crosstalk on 710 ESPN is powered by Power Pro Heating and Air and their Cross Trade Power Pro Service Specials. Great cross trade service for our listeners right now. $99 drain cleaning. Go to powerproplumbing.com.
And let me give the phone number for Power Pro because I forgot to give it earlier. It's 800-584-4116. 800-584-4116. Alan and I both know those guys personally. Those guys that run Power Pro, they're great. If you have any heating, plumbing, air needs, those are the guys to call. Sliwa, do you think we're getting baseball back this weekend?
Well, it's funny because a lot of I had Bob Nightingale yesterday, and he kind of went through the same. Doesn't it seem like we've just been having the same conversation for the last 3 weeks? Because we literally have been having the same conversation. I thought it was interesting if you guys got a chance to see Trevor Bauer's pitcher for the Reds, just his tweet. Basically saying it's the exact same offer as if it was a fully prorated at 48 games rather than 70% of prorated salaries at 72 games. I mean, listen, you said this before, John. You mentioned it earlier in the week. They're going to play baseball. That's not going to be the question. The question is going to be how many games they play. It would be absolutely, I guess you could say from just a sports perspective, unbelievable that by the time Monday rolls around, we know, okay, basketball's locked, baseball's locked as well. Major League Soccer's got something planned. Nightingale thought by Monday, Tuesday at the latest, he feels like a deal will get done. So I'll roll with what Nightingale said.
Boy, that's late, though. If they get a deal, if they don't get a deal till Tuesday, guys, they almost have to be limited to under 70 games because the calendar runs out on them. And if the owners are going to jam a deal down their throat, the owners have always said they don't want the regular season running into October. And what's weird is that means we could have the NFL regular season, the NBA Finals, and the World Series all in the first 2 weeks of October. Of course, there's also a possibility that we have no sports at all. You know, that the pandemic could screw all of this up. I kind of have a glass half full guy, but, you know, people keep telling me every time I talk about, you know, sports coming back, the football, baseball, basketball, just be cautious. This thing changes on a dime. Do any of you think that that is a real possibility? No sports in 2020?
I saw, Ramon, I saw that report today, too, the University of Houston suspending workout after six student athletes test positive. Right when I saw that, John, I went back to you saying a week ago, hey, just be cautious because you just never know. I feel like there will be sports in 2020, but I guess my mind hasn't comprehended that we're going to go that long. Like, that can actually happen, but of course it is realistic because you never know what can happen over these next few months.
Go ahead, Ramon.
I could see there being no sports in 2020. I could. I hope not. I think that we've moved into a thought process and a framework where, you know, the people leading the sports leagues recognize that the virus is here. We're living in a world with the virus, and there are ways and steps that you can take to mitigate some of your risk. And, you know, a lot of things that I read about, just, you know, how effective masks can be. I mean, there was a story I just read about, there was a hairdresser, I think it was, I'm going to get the state wrong. Okay. Like, I think it was Arkansas, that turned out as soon as the first day they reopened, turned out she was symptomatic. She saw like eight people plus people in the salon. And then the next day she got tested and was positive. So they had to contact trace everyone, but she had been wearing a mask. Okay. And all of the people they contact traced didn't get it because she'd been wearing a mask, even though she had the coronavirus. I mean, I just think we know a lot more about the virus. We know a lot more about how to keep ourselves safe if we just do those type of things. And especially they're going to do that in the NBA. They're going to do that in Major League Baseball. It's not going to be 100%. People will still test positive. People still will get it no matter all the safety protocols they put in place. But I just feel like, if we stick to what the scientists say about how to stay safe and protect ourselves, I think there is a way. The one sport I'm really worried about, though, is football, because it's a fall sport. Hmm. That's when we all think there could be a second wave. Baseball, I mean,
Ramona, not just that, not just that with football. Funch, play the Tony Kornheiser comments from PTI today. We haven't played these in a couple hours. Sleeve, I don't know if you've heard these, but Kornheiser makes some really obvious points here about football. Here's Kornheiser.
So I have felt this way that I'm going to describe to you for months, and I feel it now. I don't see how they can play football, college or pro. I mean, I just don't. Social distancing has been proven to work. You avoid contact with other people. It helps you avoid the virus. Football practice and football games are contact. It's a contact sport. You have people, big people, you know, sweating all over you. Their arms are wrapped around you. Their legs are wrapped around you. They're breathing in your face. It strikes me that football, the way it is conducted, is the recipe for spreading the virus. I just don't know how you do it.
And we're all sitting here planning on football with fans, college and pro.
Yeah,
I mean, if you talk to college football, if you talk to the NFL, they're all going forward. Sliwa, isn't Kornheiser right?
Well, I mean, if you think about it that way, what's the difference with basketball? The difference is you just don't have a helmet on. You're not wearing cleats. You're not wearing pads. But that's the same physicality. You know what I mean? Just think about guys locking up each other. Just think about on the top of the key.
It's not tackling on every play. There's not a pile on every play. It is a contact sport. You're right. But I would argue that basketball, compared to football, nothing has more contact than football. Nothing.
Thinking of guys like banging down low, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the only thing football has going for it is it is an outdoor sport, and that tends to help. And, you know, theoretically, there's a little barrier between, if this is really a respiratory droplets virus and not as much about spit and other things like that, sweat. you know, there's a little barrier there. And if they have, I remember Adam Schefter was reporting about some filter they were thinking of putting on helmets. I mean, I think there are things that they might be able to do to minimize some of that. But the only thing that works is social distancing and testing. And if you're talking about playing in home cities with fans, I mean, it just sounds like they're in total denial. And, you know, maybe our treatment of the virus will improve so much that it'll be seen as just like the common cold or a really bad cold that people can get. It won't be so bad. Maybe we'll understand it more by October, okay, when football starts. But I just, based on what we know now, I'm with Kornheiser. I just, what the heck are we talking about? Like with football? Come on.
Hey, John, I wanted to ask you this earlier. Did you care at all for the Alex Cora comments? Did it just because it was genuine? Just because it was? Yeah. Did you appreciate it a little bit just based off of how most people from the Astros? I mean,
I like Alex Cora. I liked him when he played for the Dodgers. I think he got caught cheating. I think he's paying a tremendous price for it. But I mean, I 100% believe him. We had Marley Rivera who wrote that story for ESPN and interviewed Cora on the show earlier. And she said there's no doubt in her mind that everybody in that locker room was complicit. Everybody knew what was happening. And for some reason, Alex Cora, A.J. Hinch, Jeff Luhnow, and Carlos Beltran have taken all the punishment. Not one player punished, not anybody else with any after effects. As much as he can be, I think Cora is a sympathetic figure in all this.
Yeah, I was going to say he's actually... You feel that he's genuine. You feel that, you know, this is coming from the heart. Yeah, exactly. Right. And if other players got the type of discipline that he got, maybe they would be more truthful, too. They're obviously still hiding it as best as they can.
All right. 6:24. We hit the door. Ramona, thank you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Mason's back on Monday. Sliwa next. 710 ESPN.